Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
The 2%'s right over here.
Oh, hey, Jenna. I didn't know you shopped here.
Yeah. Anything to support local food. Know what I mean?
I definitely do. Though that's not the only thing you do in the name of Good Eats, obviously.
Well, true. I also host Eating Matters every Wednesday at 5 p.m., where we talk about food policy and how it impacts all of us. Be sure to tune in.
All right, yeah, gotta get the plug in there. I get it.
Yep, I'm hashtag shameless.
You know what else you can do to support the local food community, right?
Well, yeah. Make a donation to Heritage Radio Network, the world's pioneer food radio station.
That's right. And I gotta call you out on the whole local thing.
What do you mean?
Well, The Farm Report, A Taste of the Past, Japan Eats. Those are shows that take you around the country and the world.
I'll give you that. So how can listeners give their support?
It's pretty easy. Just go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the big red heart in the top right corner. It's pretty easy from there.
Thanks.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome. As you have heard, again, this is not Chef Emily P. This is Allison Hamlin filling in for Emily this week. She is coming back from the Finger Lakes from an amazing family vacation in which she told me no one got overly drunk and no child over five, no one over five cried. And so I feel like in the spirit of our summer entertaining wine and cocktails edition, that is an appropriate way to start off. So I want to welcome my guests to the studio. We have April Wachtel. She is the founder and CEO of Swig and Swallow, and she also does a lot of cocktail and spirits consulting. Hi, April.
Hello.
Hi. We also have Katie Shrout.
Hi.
She is the wine consultant for Massanoy, which is a wine importer, and she has also worked in the past as an educator in the cocktail world as well.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome. So today, as the title may have indicated, we are going to be talking about how to entertain during the summer. And what better way to do that than have a conversation about how we can better do that? I think oftentimes as professional entertainers, sometimes I realize that my entertaining at home lacks a lot of the sort of structure and the comprehensive detail of my event party planning background. And I think what we can do here today for our listeners is bring some of our expert knowledge to bear on the topic that is probably most close to people's hearts, which is in the wake of 4th of July, thinking about summer entertaining. So, ladies, let's start with your favorite single entertaining tip for people if they are going to be having a party this summer.
I think my sort of wine recommendation that I live by is something that my Papa Al always says, which is take two, they're small. So I always say, if you're thinking you're going to take a bottle of wine, take two. Or take a Magnum, or take a bag in a box. Take something of size and quantity, because I think that it runs out faster than you think, and no one will ever be upset that you brought two.
I won't.
It's a great
be.
Tip. Yeah.
I will never be mad if you bring two.
Yeah.
April.
Yeah, if you're a guest in that situation.
What about you?
So I guess I would say, since I'm kind of representing the cocktail side of things a little bit more, I would just say that batching cocktails is like a really great way to be able to enjoy time with your friends and family, as opposed to kind of making everything to order. I have definitely been like, oh, I'm a bartender, I'm just going to make every drink to order, and then you are regretting it hardcore. So I think that even for, you know, it's just like a much lower key way to welcome people into your home or into your space and still have time to chill.
Can you tell us, for our listeners who maybe aren't familiar with what a batched cocktail is, a little bit of the philosophy behind that concept?
Yeah, so it's basically just that you are just making a very large version of whatever drink that you were going to serve, you know, again, sort of a la carte. And so the idea is that you're just going to calculate, maybe you say, I've got 10 people coming, I'm guessing that each person will have two drinks. And so just, again, scaling the recipe up to accommodate. You have two kind of main types of cocktails. So one is going to be a spirit forward or exclusively spirit cocktail, and then you have cocktails with juice. When you're doing spirit, strictly spirit cocktails, you can batch everything together and then just, you know, present it from a carafe or a pitcher or whatever that may be, and you can stir to order, or you could add dilution prior. And then if you're doing juices, if you know you're going to be consuming all of that in the same day, I would say batch it all together. But if you might be unsure about the quantities, like, hey, we might not drink all of this, I'd keep the fresh ingredients separate so you can ensure that the spirit portion of it doesn't go to waste when the fresh ingredients go bad eventually.
Okay. So I have another question.
Yes.
Can you help us sort of delineate in our minds what a spirit heavy cocktail might be as compared to a juice forward cocktail?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think two just very common great examples are a Manhattan cocktail. So you're going to have your whiskey of choice, sweet vermouth, and then bitters. And typically when you do add dilution prior to service, you want to guess 20% to 25% is going to be water, right? So you want to add that in. And again, if I just batch up my Manhattan, add the dilution, and then put it in the fridge, that means it's chilled and it's properly diluted, and I can literally just pour it for my guests. A sample or an example of a juice forward cocktail could just be a margarita, right? So again, there's going to be fresh lime juice in there, obviously your choice of tequila, and then an orange liqueur. And in that case, again, I just want to make sure if I think I might not drink it for a couple of days, I can batch the orange liqueur and the tequila together, and then just add smaller batches of the citrus when I'm ready for service.
Got it. Okay. And if I were going to do this at home, what tools should I acquire?
I think it depends on, how big we're talking here. If you're having 100 people over, you know, I'd make recommendations for that. I would say probably for the average home consumer, you certainly want one of those hand citrus presses. That will be pretty labor intensive if you're going to make drinks for, you know, 20 people or more. At that point, I might look into, there's some inexpensive electric reamer style juicers, excuse me, that are options. You can probably get these for under like $20. They will break probably within a year, but it's a little bit more comfortable than the hand press. And then if you want to scale up, and these guys are probably going to go for like $125 to $140, there's this a brand called Rashan, and these are these also these freestanding citrus presses that are found in most restaurants that use fresh juice. And this is really, you could probably use this for 20 years and it's not going to break, and it's, again, it's going to be a lot more energy efficient than using that. So that's for the citrus. You need a knife, you need a cutting board, you need a fine strainer to ensure that all of the citrus, what are they called?
Pulp.
Pulp, thank you. I'm still on the 4th of July over here.
I like the pulp. Yeah. I keep the pulp.
Well, so the reason that in cocktail bars we say strain the pulp out is because for a couple of reasons. Like, one is just homogeneity, so just consistency and appearance. Oh. And then the second, possibly more important part, is that especially with commercial dishwashers, it's going to cake the pulp on the inside of the glasses and make it really difficult to clean. So that's kind of why we say it in the professional context.
That literally never occurred to me.
Yeah. Well, that's again, but it tastes delicious, right? So it's up to you, right?
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Pitching this back to the wine world, if I am going to be entertaining a group of folks in my house, is there anything you would recommend for me to consider or pick up in terms of tools or chilling buckets or, you know, maybe something that people don't think about but would be a huge relief if you're hosting a party?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that the biggest struggles with wine are vessels to chill in. It takes up an enormous amount of space in your refrigerator, and it's nearly impossible to stand wine bottles up. So I have like a little sort of steel tub that I picked up at like Home Goods or one of those little kind of thrift style shops for maybe $15. And it holds like exercise equipment most of the time, like little bands and my football. And then at party time, it's like a massive ice bucket that holds almost a case of wine, which is really awesome. I use it all the time. It's fantastic. The other thing that I would get is either wine glasses that you don't mind breaking or good acrylic wine glasses. You know, personally, my husband is incredibly clumsy and breaks probably more wine glasses while washing them than anybody else I've ever met. So we use Govino glasses in the house. They're these little kind of acrylic, slightly malleable wine glasses. Like if you squeeze them, they bend. But their big claim to fame is that they're shatterproof. And they make different sizes. They make a 10-ounce, a 12-ounce, I think like an 8-ounce flute or 6-ounce flute for bubbles. And then they make these sort of strange beer glasses and a little decanter. So I use those on a day-to-day basis. And then when we're having like company over or drinking a really nice bottle of wine, I break out the good glasses. But
and then he breaks them.
And then he breaks them. But I would say that, you know, you can get a bunch of those. I think they're like moderately priced for a 4-pack. You can buy them online directly or through Amazon. There's like a million different places to get them. And that I kind of swear by. I also use them a lot for gatherings outside. I come from a family with a lot of dogs. And the last thing I want in the backyard is broken glass. Because it's the hardest place to pick it up. And you just don't want your dogs walking through that. So I think shatterproof glasses are really, really important if you're entertaining, you know, any number of people.
Okay, well, this gets me to the very interesting part of entertaining, which is how do you get the booze from the place to your house? and what do you, you know, like in the city, delivery is a huge deal. Do you guys have any tips and tricks for either getting things delivered or schlepping them on the train to make sure your bottles are going to get home safely?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got lots of wine tips and tricks. I mean, as somebody who hauls wine around the city professionally, I've had my fair share of grief with subways and schlepping. I mean, I carry like about 9 bottles around all day long. So my, if you don't have a professional wine bag with, you know, ice pack pockets, I recommend one of those shopping carts like you use for laundry or going to the farmer's market. Those are really great. You can either lay bottles down and separate them with a little cardboard or some sweaters, and that's usually enough to get them back and forth, and you can easily fit a case in there. I don't recommend doing much more just because they're very heavy. So, and they're not really, you know, those carts aren't meant to withstand a ton of weight. It's just enough to be, you know, your laundry or your shopping. So I'd keep it to a case if I were you. You can also do a backpack if you're doing maybe 4 bottles. Once you get up to 6, it's really heavy on your back and probably not super safe. But yeah, that's sort of my number one for shopping. Delivery is amazing. And most places, I think, in New York, if you buy a case, they'll deliver. And really, you should buy cases if you're entertaining. Because you usually get a discount. And that way you can get multiples of each kind of thing, you know? Because, like, one bottle of bubbles is never enough. You're always going to open a second bottle of bubbles. Like,
they're small. Bring 2.
Yeah, take 2. They're small. Yeah. So I think that, you know, a case gives you enough room to get a little bit of variety and a little bit of quantity. You know, it's a good shopping strategy. And I think that people get a little bit of sticker shock sometimes at the first, you know, they're like, oh my gosh, you know, 12 bottles of wine, that's a lot up front. The truth is that halfway through your party, you're going to run back to the liquor store for more.
Right.
So you might as well just get the case in the first place. It's kind of my attitude. Mm-hmm.
That sounds very smart. April, what have you learned in moving spirits and beverages across the city?
Oh, boy. There's a whole bunch of wrong ways to do this, is probably what I've learned.
Ooh, okay.
Okay.
So what should we not do, maybe?
Okay, well, let me see. So firstly, to support Katie's first comment, probably the greatest, like, booze asset that I have is a bottle bag. So it's basically, it's a wheelie bag. It will hold a full case of booze. It's foam lined on the outside, and then it has dividers, or it had these dividers on the inside. I actually removed them, but I can put them back in. So it's like really versatile. There's a handle on the top where you can just pick the whole thing up, and then it has like a handle that comes up as well, so you can just wheel it around. This is absolutely the best thing that I have to move bar tools, to move alcohol, etc. If that is not an option for some reason, I also have, and I wish I had the brand name for this. I think I bought this from Patagonia or REI maybe, but there's this amazing, amazing backpack. You definitely look like you are full on going to Europe and backpacking around. But this thing is, it's like this gray, compact, also foam lined, insulated backpack. It is rectangular in shape, and it can hold maybe 4 or 5 bags of ice. It can hold a bunch of booze. You can remove the liner so there's more space if you'd like. And it has little straps where you can throw in something if you have, if you have to bring, like, a camera tripod with you, for example. It fits in these straps. It's like the most amazing versatile thing to have it on your back. So I would say avoid one-sided sort of like shoulder bags, because you definitely will be hurting later on. I think without fail, most of us like cause like repetitive motion injuries this way. Very seriously, yeah. It's like I talk to so many people who are like walking sideways and they work in this industry and they're like, I shouldn't have been doing that. So I would say avoid that. And I would also say avoid glass bottles unprotected next to one another.
Yes.
Sounds obvious.
Really key.
Yeah. Sounds obvious, but I actually very last minute, I had to run to something. I had 2 bottles. And this is actually the first time I've ever broken a bottle in my possession in so many years of this industry. But I accidentally put it down on the ground. Like, it just hit at the exact wrong angle, and one of the bottles shattered.
I have also broken a bottle, and it was probably the most mortifying situation of my entire life.
Yeah.
I was on a crowded 4 train going uptown at rush hour. Like, everybody in Lower Manhattan was headed home to the Upper East Side. And I got on, and I pulled my wine bag onto the subway car, and it just hit the edge of the subway car. Uh-oh. So it just sort of like slammed all the bottles together. Ooh. Really quick, and one of them in the corner cracked along the bottom rim, like all the way around the bottom, and just leaked red wine into a completely full subway car.
Oh.
As the doors were closing. So everybody looks at me, and it looks like either I'm bleeding from the ankles, or and then it started smelling like wine, and they were like, what is this
girl doing? Or at least they're like, phew!
Yeah. It sucked, though, because it's red wine, and you don't want it to like stain anyone's things, and it smells. Yeah. I mean, it was a delicious Beaujolais, so it smelled fantastic to me.
So fresh.
I don't know how everybody else felt about it. So I basically waited to the next subway stop and then got off and tried to like pull everything out. It was a nightmare.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, let's not let that be anybody listening to this show right now. We are going to head to a quick break. But before we do, I just want to remind you all that Sharp and Hot is produced by Heritage Radio Network right here in Bushwick, a nonprofit member-supported radio station devoted to all things food. You can help HRN continue this work by becoming a member. I said this last week, and I believe they're still on offer, but there are some sweet koozies if you become a member, so you can take those proudly, drink through the summer.
Also protect your bottles, by the way.
Oh, yeah, you could totally use a koozie. Exactly. So if you want your bottles to be safe, whatever they are, become a member. And you can do that by heading to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. All right, we'll see you after the break.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you.
welcome back. We are here with April Wachtel, who is a cocktail and spirits expert, and she also is the founder and CEO of Swig and Swallow, which is a batched cocktail delivery service. She's making eyes like...
Well, it was batch cocktails and delivery, and I think now that we're opening up to the consumer market more than just, you know, the spirits community, who's very familiar with that phrasing, you know, we're kind of introducing it like the Blue Apron of cocktails for lazy people, wink, wink, supposed to be funny, because I think we all are... not lazy, but just are open for an easier way to do things, an easier, more time-efficient way to do things, and we enable that to happen.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, we're going to come back to that in just a second. We're also joined by Katie Shrout, who is a wine consultant for an import company, and she brings her knowledge, her wide knowledge of the wine community to bear in our discussion today. So I'm really excited. We're coming back. And I want to bring this conversation around. We've talked a lot about pre-party planning and preparation. But I do want to think a little bit about planning our menus, thinking about the arc of the party, and maybe even a little bit about how we sort of taper down and clean up. So let's start with Katie. What is something that I should think about when I'm putting this party together, about the wine that I'm choosing, or the maybe April can talk about the cocktails that I'm choosing, that maybe wouldn't occur to me? Like, I'm, you know, like I think about them sometimes, like I'm sitting in the bar and what do I want to drink? But do I need to think about what I'm going to offer my guests in a way that's different from like what interests me as a person?
Yes and no. Yes and no. I think the number one piece of advice that I can give somebody while they are party planning and choosing wine is to find themselves a great wine shop, like a true wine shop that specializes in wine, that focuses on wine. It's a little bit more challenging when you have a grocery store that also sells wine, unless you have, you know, like a really great wine steward or somebody who's there to kind of give you recommendations and guide you a little bit. My biggest frustration with wine recommendations is that they're brand specific a lot of the time. So it's like, you should try this wine from this place made by this person in this year. And what that doesn't tell you is sort of the overarching reason why that wine or a selection of wines is really appealing. So I think that what you need is an individual person to tell you about the specific offerings that are available to you in your store. And kind of bring those concepts together. So in terms of the concepts, I think that when you're doing summer entertaining, you know, obviously you want to consider your audience. You know, if these are people who kind of all drink the same thing, that's great. And if you know what they drink, that's fantastic. And if they don't, if you don't kind of know what they're into or they're into very different things, I'd say pick things you like and don't go too crazy off the beaten path, you know. Keep it reasonable. You don't necessarily need your like super funky natural pet nat from Australia, you know, that's like a very peculiar and interesting thing, but maybe an acquired taste. You know, I think you pick a, you know, maybe one of those, but have other stuff around that is sort of approachable. And I think that one of the mistakes people make is appealing to the lowest common denominator. You know, they're like, well, they won't appreciate it. And so I'm going to buy the cheapest thing available and just kind of serve it to them. Or they kind of go for like the super heady, funky stuff and it's lost on everyone. So I think, you know, you kind of need to shoot for the middle. I think your friends aren't going to appreciate these fine wines unless you show them to them. You know, it's all about the learning experience. And I really believe in sharing what you're passionate about. So I think that you need to go a step above the lowest common denominator. And then beyond that, you know, think about what you guys are doing. Are you going to be in the sun? Is it going to be hot out? Are you going to be inside with AC? Do you want things that are like cool and refreshing? You know, are you going to be like holed up on a rainy day at a lake and you want something with a little more oomph? You know, kind of think about those contexts. And I would also say if you're going to be day drinking, go low alcohol, kind of like low impact wines in general.
Or like session beers too.
Yeah. It's like the it's like the wine equivalent of a session beer. You know, you want to go for like some Vino Verde, some Muscadet, some like, you know, lower alcohol Riesling, you know, some nice kind of like light, refreshing white wines. And I think when it comes to specifics, that's where your like specific brands or producers, or even specific regions, that's where your wine shop person is going to help you. But the principle of the thing is light, refreshing, low alcohol, moderate acidity. Like those are key things so that you can kind of keep sipping and drinking ongoing with or without food.
What are some good regions if I'm going to be in the wine store asking somebody to say, this is maybe a region to look into because they have wines like this, or is there some language that we should, like some secret password that we need to like shibboleth to our wine, yeah. Our wine salesman or you woman? Know,
I think that if you stick to those things, low alcohol, moderate acidity, light body, those are things that can find homes in lots of different regions. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the Loire Valley is personally one of the regions that I'm most excited about. There's so much cool stuff. There's so much, you know, really crisp, beautiful white wines that are great for summer. But I think of Portugal, like Portugal has incredible values, both red and white. There's a lot of like really neat stuff that's sort of under the radar and you get a lot for your money. Greece similarly has like incredible white wines. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there. And I feel like it kind of depends on the selection of the store. You know, certain stores will kind of specialize in one thing or another. So they might have like a particularly large selection of Grüner Veltliner from Austria or a large selection from the Loire Valley. And so you might be kind of guided that direction by your person.
Okay. I feel better already. April, what's your advice for someone who is looking to build a cocktail repertoire for their entertaining purposes? Are there some spirits that you gravitate to? Are there some recipes? Is there a school of thought that you kind of use to guide what you decide to serve at a party?
This is a bit tough because there's so much variety and so many different, obviously we all have our own unique palates. I would say that kind of, going along with what Kay was saying, I would probably steer for like for an extended party that's not just like a single cocktail before dinner. I would actually steer towards like citrus or shaken cocktails or cocktails that are typically prepared that way. Because I have seen a lot of people drink many spirit forward cocktails and then two or three or four in are just like non-functional and kind of have to take care of themselves and take themselves out of the equation. So I would recommend drinks that can be consumed long on ice for the same reason. Again, you want to be able to be continually sort of like sipping and munching and be fine in a few hours. And actually to that point, I tend to often add soda water just to kind of top off my citrus forward cocktail in the first place. I would also say that it depends, you know, some people might want to offer like one specialty cocktail or five specialty cocktails. I typically would recommend that you also have either beer or wine. So if somebody says, oh, I just want to get something super quick or like maybe I'll have one of those later, it's like there's just great options there. And then finally, I would say too that you can either go very specific, like thematic specialty cocktails. So I'm going to base this around thyme or garden herbs or, you know, fruit that's in season, and you really craft that recipe. Or you could say, I'm going to do something that has broad appeal. So I'm going to do some version of a sour or a margarita or a daiquiri or something like that. And then offer a bunch of different things that people can add in. So different herbs, different fruits that they could muddle in, or just, you know, cucumber or mint or whatever you want to just add their own kind of like custom twist to every cocktail. Idea. Yeah. It's just, it's like a higher end version of the kind of like open bar that we're so used to seeing at friends' houses.
It's like the Bloody Mary, like the stick garnish
like
that's got
your
everything
own
on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like an oyster and a turkey and a, yes.
Well, this is not, you know, this is not quite that extreme, although you absolutely could go in that direction. But this is, again, I think for summer, having watermelon and cucumber and, again, a variety of herbs available. And again, maybe some fresh peaches or, you know, something of that nature. People get so excited when all of a sudden their drink looks like a masterpiece and all they had to do is take the base of the cocktail, hopefully already blended, again, batched out with your spirit, and then add the, you know, custom garnishes to that.
Got it. Okay. We are almost out of time, but before we wrap up, I wanted to talk a little bit about where the two of you find inspiration for the things that you are drinking these days.
Katie, you want to go first?
Sure. You know, it's funny because I'm around New York City so much in different wine bars and restaurants. And I, you know, I have a number of friends in the wine writing world. And personally, I'm a huge fan of Punch Drink, which is an online magazine covering both cocktails and wine and some other kind of like cool cultural stuff related to drinks. I find that their new wine contributor, John Benet, is really fantastic. He was one of my favorite writers when I was on the West Coast. And I think that he just kind of hits the nail on the head in terms of kind of like what's going on and where the greatest values are in wine right now and what's most exciting from a number of different perspectives. So a lot of that stuff is stuff that I see around town, and then it's sort of put beautifully into words there. That's something that I follow quite a bit, actually.
All right, so I guess it's my turn here. It's interesting in the cocktail space. I think when you see images of food, you can really guess what it's going to taste like just by seeing the image. And there's a lot of really gorgeous cocktail photos that are out there on Instagram and just generally across social media, but primarily concentrate on Instagram. And I definitely take inspiration from the appearance. And in a sense, it can also be freeing, because if you don't even reference the recipe, then you can just imagine what is going to go into it. And then you can say, I want to make this seasonal, or I want to, you know, I'm inspired by, you know, a specific song where, like, they, you know, highlight the color red, and this is a gorgeous red cocktail. So in a weird way, I think it's both inspirational and also quite disconnected, the image from the recipe itself. So I would say I love like contrasting colors. So I tend to seek that, you know, that type of, aesthetic out, but I would say there, and then again, just really like seasonal ingredients. I love going to farmers markets and just seeing again what's freshest and most local, and seeing the passionate people who are growing the produce too.
Great. Okay, last question will be really quick, and then we're going to wrap this up. Katie, where can people find your wines?
Oh, you know, Massanoy is the wines that we sell are all around town. In stores like Astor Wines and Spirits, Chamber Street Wines, Crush, I mean, you name it, we're around. Usually if you look on the back of the bottle, it'll say imported by, and there are a bunch of really great importers out there, so I would encourage people to kind of take a peek at those and see who brings in your favorite wines. That's a good way to track the stuff that you like.
Okay. And April, I know that Swig and Swallow isn't quite yet up online, but if people want more information about what you do and batch cocktails, where can they find you?
Right. So swigandswallow.com is our website. And basically we will be launching our product, which is six of the most iconic cocktails in the country. We leave room for you to add the spirits directly to the vessel. We will be launching this in this fall. But again, swigandswallow.com. On Instagram, we are swigandswallow. And then my personal is April Wachtel, April W-A-C-H-T-E-L .com. And also on Instagram as April Wachtel.
Amazing. You guys, thank you so much for joining us
today.
This is a wrap for episode 135. I did want to call out an Instagram listener, Aaron Richelle, for using the hashtag sharp and hot. If you add that to your photos, Emily will send you a cookbook, I believe. So let us know what you're doing for your summer entertaining and what you're drinking. And we would love to hear from you at sharp and hot and those spaces on social media where one shares those things. Thank you again for listening. I'm Allison Hamlin, and I believe Emily will be back this next week. David's giving me the stink eye, so I think we gotta go. So she will be
Not
joining
true.
You last week. Okay. Until then, keep playing with fire and knives.
Chef Family. Sharp and hot. The Chef Family.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.